Today's topic is Yiridat HaDorot, the decline of the generations. We will see that there is a general theme that has been accepted throughout Jewish history concerning the spiraling downwards of the generations going back to Har Sinai. What I'd like to do is look at various sources. You have 40 sources in front of you. I don't know that we're going to look at all of them, but to determine thereby if the general notion, as we will see in a moment, of the decline of the generations is something we will fully uphold, or if in fact we will understand this concept in somewhat of a different way after looking carefully at the various makoros that you have before you. I would first like to mention, and you see this in source number 2, that there are various gemaras, both the Yerushalmi and the Babli, which seem to indicate that there has been a decline of the generations. So thereby, in Yerushalmi, Gittin, Vav, Zion, there, for example, the earlier generations are called Kodshei Kodashim, the Holy of Holies, while later generations are called Hulei Hulim, the most secular of generations, comparatively. Shekalim in Yerushalmi, Hey Aleph, says that those earlier generations, Heichinu HaKol, they basically prepared everything for our taking. They went to the fields, they cut down the crops, they made them ready for eating, they baked them, they did everything possible to allow them to be consumed. And yet, it says there, Ein lanu ma la'achol, we have nothing to eat, despite the fact that they readied everything for us. We do not properly utilize it, again, a sign of the fall of the generations. In the Babli, so the Gemara Eruvin Das Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, Eruvin, says comparatively that the earlier generations had their hearts open as wide as a banquet hall, as Pichos Sha'ulam. And we, comparatively, in later generations, Kamali Nekev Mechad Sidkid, we have only the breadth and the opening to accept wisdom and knowledge of a small pinhead. That's how, again, we have fallen. The Gemara Yuma Daf Ted Amud Bet discusses the question as to what was greater, the earlier generations or the later generations, with reference to the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And it ends up concluding that the Beis HaMikdash, after all, did return after the first destruction in the earlier generations, where in the later generations it did not do so, again indicating our later decline. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Bet, discusses the fact that with reference to the famous machlokas about the role of Torah and Malacha in one's life, the Gemara ends up concluding there that the earlier authorities made their Torah keva and their Malacha arai. They made their Torah a regular thing and their Malacha something that was temporary. The Mishnei and Alubiyadim, and both of them became successful in their hands. However, later generations, they made their Torah arai, and they made their malacha keva. They made their Torah just a temporary thing, thinking that would allow them to do better in regards to making a living. Velo alu biyadan. And both of them were not successful in their hands, neither the Torah and not even the malacha. In Yevamos, Daf Lamed Amud, so there it discusses the notion of earlier generations being able to perform the mitzvah of Yibum, being the fact that they had a greater kavanah for the mitzvah, where later generations, being that we don't have such pure kavanah, have to engage in chalitza. The Gemara Tani, Daf Kavdala Namad Aleph, there as well it discusses the fact that in earlier generations, when there was a famine and there was a need for rain, that the early generations would pray for rain and rain would come after fasting as well. Whereas in later generations, the fasting takes place, the praying happens, but it does not rain. All these are indications of the fall of the generations. But no source is as clear upon this concept, and this is what we'll be returning to again and again. As the source in Gemara Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Bet Amud Bet, there it says the following: Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rava Bar Zimna, Im Rishonim Bnei Malachim, Anu Bnei Anashim, V'im Rishonim Bnei Anashim, Anu Kachamorim, V'lo Kachamuro Shal Rabbi Chanina Ben Dosa, V'Shal Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, Ela Kishar Chamorim. the Gemara says there that the following statement was made, that if the earlier authorities were like the offspring of angels, if they were like angels, then we are like people. If they were like Malachim, we are like people. If they were like people, however, then we are like donkeys. And not like the special donkeys of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa and Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. The Gemara discusses in various places, including Chulin, Dav Zayin, Amud Aleph, that in order that a takala should not come to the hands of tzaddikim, in other words, that they should not fall in any way to any avera, that even their animals were careful when it came to eating food, that if the food had not been properly had its tithing accomplished for it, that they would therefore not eat the food so that a prohibition would not come upon their masters. And we're saying that we're not like those donkeys. We are like regular donkeys. It's like saying if we were like dogs, as the Gemara said, and not like Lassie. I don't mean like Lassie. I mean like your average mutt. That's basically what it's saying concerning our role vis-a-vis the earlier authorities. And this statement, no doubt, is somewhat puzzling. To really say, especially the second half of the Gemara and Shabbos, that if the early authorities were like human beings, then we're like donkeys. The first statement, in other words, that they're like Malachim, so Lord, we're like human beings, so we are human beings. So that's not something negative. But to say if the earlier authorities were like human beings, that we're like donkeys, we're donkeys. What is that supposed to mean? How are we supposed to understand this? The Agadot Hashas on Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Bet, a compendium of different views on the Gemara on Shabbos, brings down the following. Asava Mikelm Zatzal Bier, the Chachmeinu Zichonam Livracha, Horu Lanu Bazeh. The Asava Mikelm said that the ancients, our Chachamim, were trying to teach us through this. Shalot Shol Shahevdel Bein Arishonim LaAchronim Hurak B'Madregot. One should not think that the distinction between the earlier authorities and the later authorities was only in terms of different levels. Shavishonim Ayudadolim B'Madregotam Harbeh La'od Me'Achronim. That the higher authorities, the earlier authorities, excuse me, were on a higher level than the later authorities. Ain't other Arkan, you shouldn't just think it's an issue of being on different levels. Ela Hayavdel Bein Arishonim LaAchronim Who have dealt mahuti. However, says the Sabbath Mikhail, the distinction between the early authorities and later authorities is a difference in essence. Just like the difference between an angel and a human being, they're two different beings. Oh, between a person and a donkey. Shehem shnei sugim legamre. Because they are two different entities altogether. He says that even if we were capable of taking 1,000 heads of donkeys, 1,000 brains of donkeys, and integrating them into one large head, it would not even match the small brain of a little boy. Because the two entities cannot be compared at all. This is what the rabbis taught us. This is in order to teach us that we should understand clearly that we have no understanding whatsoever about the view of the earlier authorities. So you understand, you see, incredibly, that when it says that we are like donkeys compared to the earlier authorities who are like human beings, if we understand that second segment of the Gemara as we do. So that's saying, according to the Sabbath Mikelm, that we are ontologically different than the earlier authorities. It's not just that they were smarter than we were. It, obviously, a donkey human being, you could not make such a statement. We are totally inheriting different universes, as it were, in terms of our capabilities of understanding, our intellectual possibilities at dealing with the problems and the issues that confront us. The Maharal, in his Hakdama to the Be'er Agola, gives some logic to this notion as to why the earlier authorities were on such a different level. He says, V'ata ra'u eich shiru hadorot. He says, look how the generations should be measured and looked at. Yibiyarusha u'shanim hayu kulam seichel. It's the early authorities, they were basically understood to be completely logic. Ki adam hu megufa seichel, for a person is made out of body and mind. Ubedarot rishonim gavar koach hasichli al aguf v'hayta yadel al elyona. And in the earlier years, in the years of the generations of the earlier authorities, so the power of one's logic and mind overcame the desires of the body. And it was on top in terms of controlling the being and the humanness of the person. Until it reached the point that because of their hearts and minds being so in control of their desires, of their lusts, that they were fully open of receiving all knowledge and wisdom. And they had nothing that interfered from their bodies, from their knowledge and their reasoning fully apprehending the problems and the questions that they had before them. Which is not the case, of course, by us, where we have so many distractions due to our bodily needs and desires that it interferes with our intellectual capacities. The Drasha Saran says in his 8th Drush, Daf Kuf Kav Zayin, he says, with reference to Nevuah b'Chokhmah Doach Ador, he says, it's known that it minimizes, it continues to recede, K'moshu Yadu'ah before some. As he says, is well known, and everyone is aware of. In other words, again, this is a notion that has been accepted, according to, again, Rishonim saying this, the Maran, the Duran, this is a notion that has been accepted in Jewish thought. And the Sefer Shesharim, Perek Hafbet, again, gives us this notion clearly. V'chol chachmateinu, he says, ke'ayin nechshevet. He says, all of our knowledge is considered really like nothing. Ki ayoter chacham gadol shebeinenu, eino ki yimin talmide ha-talmidim, Hasher Badarot Rishonim. Because the greatest of our wise men, he says, are not only, they're only to be considered like the students of the students who were in the earlier generations. Not the students of the Chachamim, Talmidei Chachamim, but the Talmidim HaTalmidim. The Talmidei HaTalmidim. They're only students of the students. This is what we have to know truthfully in our understanding of earlier authorities, that in no way can anyone in our generation be comparable to that of previous generations. Having said that, and establishing what seemed clearly the idea of the Yiridat HaDorot, of the fall of the generations, it is yet interesting that the Gemara brings down in various places a notion that we seem to be able to see that we do have a case where future generations are greater than earlier generations. So, for example, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Dafyud Aleph Amud Aleph, to Tanar Abanin, Mishemetu Nevim Achronim Chagi Zachari Malachi, Nistakla Ruach HaKodesh Mishrael, it says that once the final prophets passed on, that the great spirit of holiness, the Ruach HaKodesh, that one could apprehend the God's will, disappeared from the Jewish people. The Aval Pichein Hayumishtamshin the Batkol, it's nonetheless, they would utilize the idea of a Batkol, of an echo, a voice coming out of heaven in order to determine what was true. And it's brought down the following case, Pamachat Hayumisubim Baliyad Beit Gurya Biyerecho. One time they were sitting together up in the home of Beit Gurya in Jericho, Nidnalihem Batkol Mina Shamayim, and a voice came to them from the heavens. Yesh Kanechad Shira Uishat Yisrael Av Shechina. He says there is one here in the Beit Gurya who is sitting here, who is on the level that he should be able to have God's presence rest upon him. And then it says in parentheses, Kemoshe Rabbeinu, as Moshe Rabbeinu was capable of having the Shechina rest upon him. It's just that his generation is not fitting for it. It says, therefore they looked over to Hillel, the older Hillel, who was, of course, they believed the one who was being spoken of, and consequently they thought that who was the individual who could have the Shechina rest upon him, as Moshe Rabbeinu could, as the parentheses say, in the Gemara. I point out the parentheses because note on the side, you'll see where I bring it for you. There it says, Svarim Acherim, Eino, and other text, this is not there that it says like Moshe Rabbeinu, and you understand why. I mean, this is the view of Rosh Shlomo Luria, that this should not be read. And then it's brought there in the brackets in the note after it says Rashal, who brings the other text to disagree with this Moshe Rabbeinu inclusion. It says, Da'af agav sha'Rashal mocheg zeh mitam hanoda. Even though the Rashal wiped out this Moshe Rabbeinu as being in there, the idea, he says that it's clear, the idea that someone could have the same level of Ruach HaKodesh as Moshe Rabbeinu, could have the Shekhinah dwell upon him like Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously, it sounds like heresy that someone could say that, so he left it out. So nonetheless, this writer puts down, Mikoma from HaRambam, the Sof Perek Shmini, Sof Perek Shvi, the Shemona Parakim. Even so, the Rambam, of course, is the author of this principle of faith that no one would ever be like Moshe Rabbeinu, as, of course, he derives from the last Mishnah in the Sanhedrin. So he writes, nonetheless, the Rambam in the Shemona Parakim, Hanuska Kedi'ita L'Faneinu, Vayin Sham Pirusha. The Rambam himself has the text that we have in the parentheses, that in fact the Gemara was saying that someone was fitting to be on the level of being Mekabel the Shekhinah like Moshe Rabbeinu was. Incredible, the Rambam says that. How could he say it? So if you look there in the Rambam, he seems to understand that basically Hillel had developed his intellectual capacity in his mind, like Moshe Rabbeinu had, to agree to receive, if you will, the Shekhinah on a very high order. Not, however, that he was, of course, on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. But it's just interesting that that is the case, and it shows us that there was someone, Hillel, who is capable, again, it would seem, the way it's discussing it, even if it's whether it means Moshe Rabbeinu's level or not, which it seems not to be able to be, nonetheless, that Hillel could get such a madrega shows us how great he was in a future generation. But perhaps if that's not clear, the famous Gemara Menachos of Kaftet Ambet would make it even clearer. The Gemara says there, Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Bishasha Allah Moshe Lamarom, at the time Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the heavens to receive the Torah, Matzola Kadosh Baruch Hu Shiyoshe the Kosher Kitari Laotiot. So he found that the Kadosh Baruch Hu was sitting and putting on crowns onto the letters. So Amar Lepara Ribbono Shelam. So he says, Nu, Ribbono Shelam, Mima Akei Vayecha, what are we waiting for here? Why do we have to do this? Amar Lo, Adam Achad Yesha Ati Liyot Besov Kama Darot. He said there is a person who is going to come in the future at the end of many, many generations. Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef Shemo. His name is none other than Akiva ben Yosef, the famous Rabbi Akiva. Shatid Grosh al kol kotz v'kotz, tiling tiling shel halachot. He will, later on at that time, he will learn things from every little leg, every little mark that is on the letters, all the crowns on the letters. He will learn a myriad, hills and hills of halachos. Amar l'panav Ribbono Shelam harehu li. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribbono Shelam, please show me this Akiva ben Yosef. Amar lo chazor l'acharecha. So he told Moshe Rabbeinu to turn around and halach v'yashav b'sof shmona shorot. He went and he found himself sitting in the very last rows of the shir of Rabbi Akiva. V'lo yayodea mahin omrim. He didn't know what they were talking about. And Tashash Kofo, he became very faint. He didn't know what's going on. Rabbi Minayin Lecha. So when they came to a certain issue, so the Talmidim asked the Rabbi with the Akiva, how do you know this? So he said, it's Allah that goes back to Moshe Mishinai. So then Moshe Rabbeinu was revived as a result of hearing his name mentioned. He came before God again. He said before him, Almighty God, he said, you have a man like this, like Akiva ben Yosef, and you're going to give me the Torah to give to the Jewish people. Amarlo shtok. He said, quiet, silence. So has it come in my thoughts to do in this way. Amar Lefanav, Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, Ribbono Shelam, Haritaini Taratau Harini Scharo, you showed me his power, now show me his reward. Amar Lo Chazor L'Acharech, he said again, return, turn around. Chazor L'Acharav, Rasha Shokin B'Scharo B'Makulin B'Makolin. He turned around and he saw that Rabbi Akiva's flesh was hanging in the Roman meat market. Amar Lefanav, Ribbono Shelam, Zu Torah V'Zu Schara. So he said, God Almighty, this is the Torah and its reward. Again, God says, quiet, silence, this is the way I have thought to do this. many questions about this Gemara. One I just want to point out as an aside, that's a critical aside, that Elliot Dorf, in a book that he wrote on conservative Judaism, a conservative rabbi, proves, he says, from this Gemara, that the generations evolve, that the Torah evolves. If this doesn't prove it, he says, I don't know what does. How could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu, who came in many earlier generations, much later is sitting in Rabbi Akiva's shir and does not understand what's going on? Obviously, this shows that Rabbi Akiva was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, and that the later generations are, in fact, greater than the earlier generations. Kum Fakir is exactly the opposite of what we're trying to show as the theme so far has been, that there's been a decline of the generations. No, Rabbi Akiva was greater, Elliot Dorf said, and thereby in our generation as well, he implied, we can make changes to things that early authorities have done through the conservative movement. There's one way I just want to point out that that's an incorrect understanding of the Gemara. Among other things, one could say, if you look at Rashi there, a chavrus of mine, no one's pointed this out to me, Rabbi Joel Zeff, who's now a Rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, Rashi says there on the place, Nigyash Adato, Moshe Rabbeinu was settled again in terms of his knowledge. It says, Shomoshe, Moshe Rabbeinu was settled, Ho'il Mishomo Omer, because since they said something in his name, so he became revived. Afal Pi Sha'adayin Lo Kibla. This is so, even though Moshe Rabbeinu had not yet received the Torah. How interesting is Rashi's comment. Of course, once you hear him say it, it's so plushy. You understand, if you saw it, the goddess of the Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah, and he was waiting there for God to put on the crowns, and this took place. The event of going to Rabbi Akiva's shir, seeing the greatness of Rabbi Akiva, before Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah. He was there waiting to receive it. After he received the Torah, if he would have gone to Moshe Rabbeinu's shir after learning with Rabbi Shalom going through the Torah with him, then he would have understood Rabbi Akiva's shir. But now, the fact being that he had not yet received the Torah, of course he didn't understand Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi Akiva's shir. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, if he's devoid of Torah, is not capable of understanding Rabbi Akiva. But once he had Torah, he would have understood him. A very incredible point by Rashi. But nonetheless, the implication might have been, although we are now, in a sense, dealing with that kasha, it might have been that Rabbi Akiva was greater to some degree than Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, you might say so. We've kind of proven that that's problematic, but let's say one would say so, as it seemed to be perhaps implied by just a raw reading of that text. Now, look at source number 12, which I have in front of you. The Derech HaKodesh, the Perek Yud Tet, or I should say the 19th letter of the Bala Tanya, is Likutim. He says there an amazing thing, which to my mind will help us understand a great machlokes that ensued in Jewish history. Here he says, he points to look at the Arizal, he says, and Parshas Vayikra, and also Parshas Ki Tisa. If you look at the Arizal there, he says, the Likutei HaArizal on the Parsha. So he says, Ki He sata Moshe Rabbeinu l'mashalom v'lo haita b'bisinat pinimiyut. He says hasagat Moshe Rabbeinu l'mashalom lo haita b'bisinat pinimiyut. Moshe Rabbeinu's apprehension of, he says, of Ribono Shel Olam was not on the level of pinimiyut. Pinimiyut, as it says, going to the core of the matter. In Kabbalah, this has a certain deeper understanding about a certain depth that one goes. We won't go into that now. But again, it basically means Moshe Rabbeinu could not go to the very core of certain issues that the Arizal could go to. And it's the Arizal says this. The Malachi is just quoting the Arizal. Kidiktiv, as it says, as it says that you shall see my back, Moshe Rabbeinu has told me he's on Har Sinai, and you shall not see my face. Panai, he understands me to play on paninius. That you shall not see the paninius of me, you shall only see acharai. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was told on Har Sinai. And the Bala Tanya, the first of all, the Rebbe says, seemingly this is a wondrous, incredible statement by the Arizal. Harei nemar v'lo kam navi obi Yisrael to Moshe. We know that it says in the Torah itself, another prophet shall not arise like Moshe Rabbeinu. So, Garizal, the Balatani asked, how could it be Garizal apprehended Yoter Mimenu, that he understood on a deeper level than Moshe Rabbeinu? The Darash Kama Zerushin, Kibasina Pininus, and he was able to understand on a depth of understanding to the level of Pininus that Moshe Rabbeinu was not capable of understanding. Ah, Pininian Hupashut. The Balas Tanya, however, says that there's a simple answer. We'll move on the call. It's understood to everybody. Sheish Hefresh Gadol Ben Hasagat Chochma Emet Kirash Biv Arizal Shei Hasagat Chochma V'Dat Ubein Hasagat Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Shalom Ushar Nevi'im B'Nevuah HaMechuna V'Katu B'Shem Riliyah Mamish. He says the distinction is between Nevuah and other kinds of knowledge. It says that a prophet would never arise like Moshe Rabbeinu. And indeed, a prophet never will arise like Moshe Rabbeinu. And the way that the Arizal and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai before him and other presumably great Kabbalists were capable of understanding to the very depths of things Moshe Rabbeinu even could not understand, according to him, it's pashut, because there, we were talking about by Moshe Rabbeinu, a level of nebuah. That's one way to apprehend the Baal Shema. Here we are speaking about, the level of knowledge, of wisdom. And going through that path, there is a way to reach a greater depth than Moshe Rabbeinu. What's interesting is the Geras HaKodesh, the Balas Tanya says this is pashut. It's not pashut to me at all. Because as we know, if you look in the Rambam Tikri Amuna, the full blown explanation of them as they come in both the Rambam's Perush and Mishnayos, Tehillim Sanhedrin, and also throughout the Nevuchim. So there we know that Moshe Rabbeinu not only was the greatest Navi, as the Rambam understands Navi to relate to intellectual perfection, to wisdom and to knowledge. To just say, as the Balas Tanya says, with all due respect, that it's not a problem because they apprehended the Ribbono Shel Olam and his Shekhinah from a view of knowledge and wisdom. Moshe Rabbeinu did it through Nevuah. According to the Rambam, Nevuah is the highest level of knowledge and understanding. And as we know, the Rambam says that Moshe Rabbeinu reached the highest level of anyone who would ever live on the face of the earth. And consequently, there's no doubt that Moshe Rabbeinu traditionally is understood to have had a deeper understanding than anyone else. And yet, the Balas Tanya says, again, he's quoting the Arizal. I can't blame the Balas Tanya. The Arizal saying that he reached certain levels that even Moshe Rabbeinu himself could not reach. Now, to Tzliyat Tzuma, it seems to me it could be understood quite clearly why you had such a machlokas between the Hasidim and the Mishnagdim. Of course, there are many issues involved, but certainly there's more, as you know, I hope, than just davening late, or doing somersaults and simchas, or being involved in a lot of singing and dancing, perhaps in earlier times at the expense of Torah study. One of the things that it was, and I've heard the name of several Gedolim, that this was the Nekuda in the Machlokas, was this here. Of course, as I point out, the Arizal says that the Gra also believed in the Arizal. But this notion that a Kabbalist could be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, in terms of at least the degree of knowledge that he can apprehend in Rosh Hashanah and in the world, is something that's just incredible to be able to say. I mean, you can understand that Hasidim would say, as we have today in our world, that you know, our Rebbe was on this Madrega and comparing their Rebbe to who knows who. Moshe Rabbeinu and beyond, recently in Eretz Yisrael, someone introduced a certain Rebbe as being greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, other than the Hasidim there stopped him. But this whole notion that you could have someone of that level, Moshe Rabbeinu, certainly in our time, it's incredible. Nonetheless, my point is here from this source that you see as well from the Balas Tanya a possibility, the Arizal say, that to some degree, in any event, you could have someone who is even greater than Moshe Rabbeinu in a certain way, to a certain degree. To that degree, I'm suggesting, you see that you don't necessarily have Yerida Tadoros. You have someone who's capable of overcoming the Yerida Tadoros theory and situation and scenario. Now, I would suggest, and I think there's an answer to this so-called kasha that I'm bringing on the idea of Yerida Tadoros, and that is that we can say that although it is true that there is a notion of Yerida Tadoros, of the fall of the kind of the generation throughout Jewish history, that nonetheless, these cases show, even if you want to show the cases in the Gemara and take them literally and not try to explain them away, as we have, nonetheless, these cases show that we are speaking of individuals. In other words, it is possible for an individual to overcome the general atmosphere of Yeridas Hadolos that pervades Jewish history. That's possible. We're only saying the generation goes down. It's a din in the door. It's not a din in the Yachid. It's possible that the Yachid could somehow rise above the generation. Indeed, if you look at a sefer called Derech Sicha, Daf Reish Yutet, this is conversations on the Parsha between the author and Rav Chaim Knievsky, and he also brings down there the following. He says, Shal ha'agar of Al-Khamen Wasserman, Zatzal, the top student of the Chavetz Chaim of Al-Khamen Wasserman, asked the Chavetz Chaim, Amar Shagon of Chaim Lulosh and Zatzal, Amar al-Agra, Shehu ka-Rashba o ka-Ramban. The Chaim Lulosh said about his great Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, that he was as great as the Rishonim, like the Rashba of the Ramban. And Chaim Lulosh asked Rav Chanan Wasserman, how could he say that? If he ta'ein b'dor kazeh, adam kazeh, how could it be? We believe in Yeridas Hadoros. We believe in the decline of the generations. How could it be that such an individual like the Vilna Gaon could be like one of the Rishonim in his generation? It's interesting that he says that in that generation, Chatham Sofer, some others say that the generation of the Grah was an incredible generation with incredible gedolim. But on the other hand, one can understand as well that it was certainly a time of a very low generation, because it was right after the Shabtai Tzvi affair, and the belief in Klal Yisrael, they started to give up their belief in the Kehila system, the idea that the Rav of the Kehila was in charge and could properly give advice to the Kehila, because after all, there were many Rabbanim in Klal Yisrael and called the Shabtai Tzvi who went astray, even great Gedolim did so, some of them. And consequently, some identify that, by the way, as the beginning of the so-called modern era and the fall of traditional Judaism. Some historians give that as the point. But nonetheless, the Chafetz Chaim was asked this question by Neo Chafetz Chaim answered. Sha'alta she'la tova, he said, you asked a very good question. V'anelecha tshuva tova, and I'll give you a good answer, says Chafetz Chaim. Yesh yirida kol azman v'kol dor v'dor. Chafetz Chaim, first of all, establishes that there is a constant Yeridas Hadoros, a constant fall of the generations, and one should not at all think that will be changed. So that's clear, he says. Ulefamim ha'yiridah kol kach gedolah. And you know what he says? Sometimes the fall is so terrible, it's so deep, shemuchrachim la'otzra, that there's a need to stop the fall. That if we go any lower, who knows what will happen. And he says that the reason that the Ribono Shel Olam sent the Vilna Gaon was in order to put a stop to the fall of the generation. This is an incredible understanding of what happened here, I think, by the Chofetz Chaim. Because this is saying almost more than I said before, with reference to what I said before about an individual being able to overcome the Yeridas Hadoros. So here, I think it's saying even a little stronger that no, that's not the case. An individual, generally speaking, the Chofetz Chaim saying, I would point out, cannot overcome Yeridas Hadoros. The fact that the Gra overcame it, the Chofetz Chaim says, because the Ribono Shel Olam specifically sent the Gra, even though we know every individual to some degree, we know is sent on a mission, as the Shlichus of the Soloveitchik writes so beautifully in his Sefer on this subject. But even though that's the case, we know that every individual has his mission. Nonetheless, the Chofetz Chaim's language, the Ribono Shel Olam had to send the Gra in order to stop the generation from falling. It almost sounds like the Yeridas Hadoros is a given. There's no debate about it whatsoever. Even individuals can't overcome it, except if Ribono Shel Olam chooses to miraculously get involved and thereby have an individual overcome it. Only then will such a theory take a hit, if you will, by an individual. And Ribono Shel Olam himself becomes actively involved and makes sure that there's somewhat of an element that is against the Yeridas Hadoros notion. So we have seen from these sources, nonetheless, that source number, the first sources we saw, the first theme of Yeridas Hadoros, the Chazal believes in that, we've shown him. We've seen now from various Gemaras that individuals can either overcome it or at least through Baruch Shalom choosing to have it shifted, can allow for an individual to overcome Yerida Tadaros as well. What I want to ask now is, in going into, if you will, the third area, is having said all this, is it possible nonetheless that Yerida Tadaros and the theme established by it is not completely true? It's not true. There are various Gemaras that seem to point this out. For example, and there are many, we're only going to look at the, because of time limitations, a few of them. The Gemara, for example, in Gittin Daf Hamad Aleph, excuse me, Daf Hamad Bet, points out, it seems that there's not always Yerida Tadaros, at least according to the simple pshat. Some of the Farshim there may disagree, but the simple pshat, it says, I say Gita on the Tami of Yeshua ben Levi, a get came before Yeshua ben Levi, V'amalai Tzarichna l'meymar b'fnam b'fani nechtam b'fani nechtam olo. So you ask them, do I have to say, as is the case we know from the famous commandments there, famous Mishnah, is one brings a get from Adina Sayam from across the sea, he has to testify, if you will, he has to state that it was written before me, and it was sealed before me based on Machlokas, Rav and others concerning, if this get could even be executed, so he has to say, b'fani nechtam, to establish this. So does he have to say it? He asked from Yeshua ben Levi. He asked if he has to say this formula or not. Amar lei lo tzarich. So he said he didn't have to, which is strange. Well, he haven't asked. That's halacha. He has to say it. So whether you can't be mitayim it, or whether because it's not written, we're not the king mishma, whatever the reasons were in Gittin. So you got to say b'fani nechtam. So why is it that it didn't have to be said? He was told. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Lo Amru Ella V'Dorah Ravishonim, She'ein V'Kin Nishma. According to the view that holds that you have to say this formula, it's only in the earlier years, many generations back, when they were not experts at the notion of having to get written for the sake of the woman. Aval V'Dorah Ravishonim, V'Kin Nishma Lo. But in later generations, where we are now experts in being able to write a Gedli Shema, knowing what that means, so there is no need anymore for that formula. So this indicates, it would seem, again, postulates to the Gemara, that later generations could overcome the deficiencies of earlier generations. The Gemara Gittin, saying Gittin Daf Lama Devav Amabet, mentions the following, Ibailahu, Ki Hikin Hillel Fruzbo, Lidari Hu Ditakin? Oh, Dilma Lidari Alma Nami Takin. The Gemara asks, interesting, Shiloh, when Hillel made his famous decree of the Prose Bowl, that is to say, when there was a problem in the sabbatical year of debts being wiped out, and we know that the Torah says you have to loan a poor person money, and in the sixth year, you can imagine, people might not want to loan money to the poor, even though the Torah says you have to, fully, but you may not want to because you know it's going to be wiped out in the sabbatical year. So Hillel saw, again, while the conservative movement, Laavdil, understood this to mean a change that Hillel made in the law, and you see you can make changes in the law, Laavdil Allah Havdalos. Hillel saw that the law was not being properly kept. The Jews were not loaning in the sixth year to the poor, which is a part of the Torah, you have to loan. So in order to strengthen the law, not to abrogate it, Chas v'Shalom, in order to strengthen the law, Hillel came up with the following idea. Created a takana called the Prose Bowl, which something Greek means before the court, in the Greek language. And what he did was, he said that if one would sign a document called the Prose Bowl, which you can still do today, you can sign this document, give it to the court. The Beit Din is not subject to having that document that it is holding on to be canceled and wiped out. And thereafter, following the sabbatical year's completion, the individual whose debt it was can go regain that document and utilize it once again to get his loan that he had made back and paid to him. So that is the Prose Bowl that Hillel created, and the question here in our Gemara is, did he make it only for his generation, or did he make it for later generations as well? In the discussion, the Gemara says, "Amai nafkamina, what's the difference?" So the Gemara answers, "Labatle." In order to be able to wipe out the takana, Emr the dare who's talking, if he only did it for his generation, So then you could wipe it out in his generation. If you want to say he made it for all future generations, if he made it for all time, so you have to know that, because a Beit Din who wants to wipe out his current Beit Din, another Beit Din who wants to wipe out this takana could not do so unless it was a very big Beit Din. It'd be a Beit Din who is greater than an earlier Beit Din. This is somewhat of an aside, but you see here the notion that Rashi points out in that Gemara. The question is there, why is it that Hillel, what do you mean he made it for his generation or for future generations? What does that mean? So the Farshim point out that even though Hillel made it as a takana for his generation because he saw that the Jewish people were not loaning money to the poor, yet it could be, what if in future generations the Jewish people were once again loaning money to the poor in the sixth year and, throughout the years until the sabbatical year. Thereby, it could be that in a Beit Din might see that it could uproot this takana. There was no longer a need for it because later generations were better than earlier generations by once again loaning money to those in need. So you see from this, it seems, that even though earlier generations there had to be a takana for a pros ball because people are not loaning money to the poor, that the Gemara is willing to consider the fact that in later generations there could be a legitimate need for a Beit Din to undo the pros ball because there will be Jews who are doing the proper thing, who are greater, at least in this degree, than earlier generations. Of course, this idea that, which comes from Hishon and Adriot, Aleph Hay, that a Beit Din cannot be Mavatel, the Takanas of another Beit Din until it's greater in Chochmah and Minyan. And of course, Mepharshim is saying greater in Chochmah and Minyan means, let's say they're greater than Gedolei HaDor, or in Minyan, obviously can't mean the number on the Sanhedrin, it's always the same number, but there are greater Talmidim, or greater Talmid Chachamim, different explanations in terms of what that means. But the idea that there could be a greater Beit Din in Chochmah and Minyan itself is an indication, it would seem, that later generations could be greater than earlier generations. So we seem to have somewhat of a stira in these sources that seem to indicate that at least to some degree, from some particular perspective, it was presumed that you could have later generations that are greater than the earlier generations. Now, the Tosfos Yontov brings a very interesting statement, which the Chazon Ish has he's very upset with. And the statement is as follows. He's discussing the Rambam, Perek Bet Mehilchot Mamrin, with a Ketzef Mishnah, in discussing various issues there about Zakin Mamre and the ability to disagree with authority. So there, the Ketzef Mishnah makes the following statement. He says, Mechatimata Mishnah, Kimu v'kiblu, below lachlok ala tanayim. V'chein v'chatimata gemara, kibel aleihem, shelo lachlok ala hamorayim. Ketzef Mishnah says that from the time of the close of the Mishnah and the time of the close of the Gemara, the Klal Yisrael accepted upon themselves not to engage in a machloket with the earlier authorities. Now, what's interesting about this language is that it seems to be saying, as you see, it says, Kimu v'kiblu, they accepted upon themselves. We know this is taken, of course, from the Megillat Esther. This is a strong language, Kimu v'kiblu, a full taking upon themselves. I mean, fully. But nonetheless, it sounds like, does it not, from the Lashon of Ketzef Mishnah, that as opposed to back to our earlier source, which was so significant, we saw in the notion of Yuridas Adamos, our earlier source had said, if the early authorities are like Anashim, then we are like Chachamim. Excuse me, we are like Chamorim. If the earlier generations are like people, then we are like donkeys. And we saw that the Sabbah Mikhelm said that that means we are ontologically different. We are not on the same, not just on the same level. We are not the same being. We inhabit different universes. We are different creatures. It sounds like the Ketzef Mishnah not that way. The Ketzef Mishnah seems to be saying that it was something we accepted upon ourselves. It was either out of respect for the earlier generations or out of a notion perhaps of a there's a Professor Menachem Kellner who writes in one of his works, which we'll get to later, he writes in the work concerning Yerida Fedoros and the Rambam, he says that it's possible perhaps that we accept it upon ourselves not to be cholik on earlier authorities because, let us say, they were the Shalshelet Hamasora, that they were, if you will, the foundation and the chain of the tradition. It's almost like saying in America that to some degree we don't cholik, we don't argue on the Constitution. We may discuss things about it, but the Constitution is kind of sacrosanct. It seems it's in something holy that you don't touch, you don't play around with. To some degree, maybe that's being said here by the test of Mishnah. It sounds like it was just something that was accepted as something that was not morally objectionable, was not, if you will, in theory objectionable for later authorities to disagree with earlier authorities. It just came on the table and we accepted that we're not going to do it. Now, the Chazon Ish, as I said, in his Kovetz Igrot, Bet Kavdalid, says the following. He says, with reference to what the Kesef Mishnah says, he says earlier in his statement that in no way can earlier authorities with their small minds and hearts disagree with the Balei Mishnah. The truth is always with them. They always have the truth. There's nothing to talk about. It's impossible to think otherwise. After saying all this, he says, Humashi Katav, Maran Akesed Mishnah, Behilchot Mamrin, Bet, what we quoted, Shekiblu Kev. That was the Akesed Mishnah said, that this was something they accepted upon themselves. Not that it was in theory objectionable, just they accepted not to be cholik with early authorities. He says, Lo tova v'chesed asui marmishonim. He says the Kesef Mishnah did not do a good thing or a nice thing with the earlier authorities. Ela ha'emetiehotam. Rather, the reason, though, Chazon Ish says, that later authorities did not disagree with earlier authorities is because truth required them to take such a stance. Ki ech na'aseh al da'atenu im yadanu shedatenu kitsara v'emet ein itanu. He says, because how is it possible that we will go with our point of view if we would only know that our knowledge is so short-minded, so little, and that the truth is not with us? So you see this machlokas between the Chazon Ish and the Kesef Mishnah concerning, and going back again to the first major statement we had about donkeys versus human beings, how far do we go with that? It would seem like the Kesef Mishnah, at least, is willing to say that to some degree this is not to the extreme that we have taken it with the Sabbath Mikhalim and others, but in fact that it could be that it's just a stance, as I said, a certain perspective that is taken by later authorities toward earlier authorities, but not to the degree of the difference in nature of the two beings of Arishon and Achron that others have put forth earlier. Now, I found an incredible statement by Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Emet Yaakov and Moed. It's actually, I found it in the Agada Hashas, again, the compendium that I have on Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Bet, where we had the idea of the early authorities being like human beings and more like donkeys. Again, the Rabbi Yaakov says very strongly there, he said, you should know that this general principle that we are like donkeys compared to the early authorities, he says this is not just some nursery rhyme, this is not just some phrase, some poetry. But he says that all the foundations of Sak Halacha, of rendering decisions in Jewish law, are built upon this theory. He says that whenever the Gemara has a difficulty on an Amara, and it brings a bright kind of statement to disagree with the Amara, Zehu rak mishum haklal hazeh, shelvim arishonim ka malachim, and so on. It's only because of this notion, he says, that we have the inability of later authorities to disagree with earlier authorities. Behind the shenitama eze atikufa, he says an amazing thing, he says, which is to say, Kishinestama Aza Takufa Shuv Iashar Babali at Takufa Habaa Liakarmikan Lachlokaliha. He says, fascinatingly, that once the end of a particular age and era has come, it is not permitted for those of the next era to disagree with those of the previous era. Because then those who come in the next generations are lower than the previous generations. He says, how do you distinguish between these eras in halakha? It's fascinating. He says that it is done by the greatest one of the generation of that era, Shekhai the Sofa Tekufa, who lived at the end of the era. He says that that last great mind of the generation, that great leader, gathers together all the halachas that were new in that period of time. And this is what it means in Drekei Avos. The whole idea that Moshe gave to Yeshua, Yeshua to the Zekanim, the Zekanim to the Nevi'im, Ashkenaz and Gedolah, and so on. And after that, there's the Tekufas of the Tanayim, the Amoraim, the Gaonim, the Rishonim, the Achronim, Ad Tatimata Shulchan Aruch. Kikibu Tahalakos Mora of Sofa Tekufa. Amazing thing, just like he says, basically the Chumash is a closed book, and then the Nevi'im, and then the Ketuvim, and then you have the Mishnah, because that's the end of the Tanayim, Rav Yehuda Hanasi, and then you have the Gemara for Rav Yehuda and Rav Ashi, and then you have, however you're going to define the Rishonim and the Gaonic period, and the Shulchan Aruch ending, if you will, perhaps that era that came before him by putting together the Rush and the Riff and the Rambam, and choosing between who would be the Psak for Klal Yisrael there kind of ending the Rishonim, if you will, of their period. But Yaakov says we learn this from this comparison of Malachim to Bnei Adam and of Bnei Adam to Chamorim. It's not a Melitza Balma, says Rav Yaakov. Again, he takes this very seriously. I don't know, is it possible to understand him with the Kesef Mishnah? Perhaps it is. Perhaps he's saying that this is not, again, an ontological difference. It's, again, to be understood that there's a certain development, if you will, of the halakhic process, how should I say, at least in terms of the nature of authority, where at the end he's saying of a certain tekufa, so it is, there's a certain formality that is put into place that, where, if you will, as the Rambam, let's say, mentions, and we'll see this later as well, where the Gadol Hador sets up these halakhas, and those halakhas are accepted by all of Klal Yisrael, and you're not calling on them anymore. Again, it's not a notion, perhaps, that the early authorities were so much greater in nature, on a different level, their mindset. It's, you know, a certain level of the way the generations flow, which again might be a Yerida Sadarus idea, but not in the same vein, perhaps, of saying we're donkeys, and that the earlier generations were human beings. Now, with this thought, again, of still looking deeper into this concept of Yeridas HaDorot and not just kind of accepting it as is, but seeing what it fully means, there's a fascinating Gemara as well. In Gemara Chulin Daf Vav Amud Bet, the Gemara there says Chulin Daf Vav Amud Bet, and we can't go through the whole Gemara, it's too long, but to give a short summary of it, there's a case there where there's a shaila about Beit Shan, and Beit Shan and the vegetables and fruits that are there, if one has to tithe from them or not. In other words, is Beit Shan considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael or not, historically? And it seems to be established, Gemara says, that generally tithing was done from Beit Shan. It was seen as part of Eretz Yisrael. However, a testimony was given about Rabbi Meir. In front of Rabbi, it says that he, Rabbi Meir, did not tithe from Beit Shan, and it says that he tira Rabbi at Beit Shan kula al yada. By hearing this testimony about Rabbi Meir, so thereby Rabbi permitted that one could eat fruits and vegetables without tithing. So as Rashi explains, now this being the case, So Rebbe's family, it says, Echav Beit Aviv, his whole family and his friends asked on him, how could he be that Makom Ashavotecha Vavot Avotecha Nagdubo Yisr Ata Tino Bor Heter? How could it be you're going to permit something that all the generations before you, your family members even have permitted, have forbidden? How could that be? So Rebbe ends up saying a famous statement, which is good to know. He says, Makom Yinichu Lo Avotav Lihigadebo. He says that our forefathers left us a place in order to grow and become great, that we should be able to continue developing those areas that need to be developed. So too, if you look at Rashi, it's an amazing statement Rashi makes. Rashi says on this, listen to this Rashi, Kishiyavo Baneinu Achareinu, Im Lo Yimseu Malet Akein, V'ma Yidal Shemam. So Rashi says, a great psychological insight. He says that if our children are going to come after us, and the earlier generations are going to correct everything there is to correct and to fix, with what will further generations, our children and grandchildren, how are they going to make their name great? How are they going to make a name for themselves? How are they going to accomplish? Every generation has to accomplish. Every generation has to fill in something to psychologically to know that you can accomplish. Is how would you live if you know that you can't accomplish something on this earth? And Rashi points out again that this is being stated here, that the Chazal and the early authorities even did not take care of everything. They left things for us to do as well. And thereby, we can understand to some degree that if there are things that we come up with that earlier generations did not, it could be the earlier generations did not have to face those challenges. It could be, perhaps we could explain the Arizal, this was someone one of my students once explained, one of the people in the shul I heard, that it could be that by the Arizal, that the Balatanya, the Arizal was even greater, but Moshe Rabbeinu in some areas, maybe you could say that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to go into those areas. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was not required to look into those areas. If he would have gone in, he also would have hit Kanibius HaTorah there. But he was not required to. The Arizal, for his time, had to go into those particular areas and develop them as far as possible. Maybe thereby it's understanding that, again, you can still maintain, if you will, your gift, the Arizal HaTorah, but that in every generation there is still what to do and for individuals to develop their own sense of greatness in terms of what they are capable of doing. Now, the next source is a critical one because it will kind of make somewhat of a, I say, peshara, some way of dealing with a compromise, perhaps, of Yerida Tadoros, and yet our own notion that perhaps certainly we see in the scientific fields that we do tend to grow and excel beyond what has come before us. I'm speaking about a source in the Hatamah L'Megillas Esther by Rav Yitzchak Gideleon, where there he writes as follows. He says, we know that the Megillas Esther, of course, came to defend the Rambam against the critique and the critical remarks of the Ramban in the Sefer Mitzvahs. And there he says as follows, "V'tzagarot ha-Ramban lo nachadati, v'amarti lo meitzachut ala ra'av, v'galot et libi neger atzakot ha-Ramban." He says, he points out, tries to defend the Rambam against the critical remarks of the Ramban. "V'yal yatmiya ha-matmiya alai, eich mele'eni libi lavo listor davar midiv ha-rishonim, v'heima chachamim chuchamim." And he says, don't ask on me in shock, how could it be that you are going to disagree? You are going to disagree with the one that he's showing you. In other words, because he's going to disagree with the Ramban. Of course, we could answer and say that he's not really disagreeing with the Ramban because he has the Rambam on his side. But nonetheless, he raises the kasha himself that he's fighting and doing battle with the Ramban. How could that be? After all, you read the Tadoros. So he says, Ki al zeh ashiv omer mash katab chacham harofe Rabbi Shlomi al-Moli. He quotes a certain doctor, Shlomo al-Moli. He says, at the end of his book, Pesot Sifra Akata Shekara Maseit L'chol HaMachanot, Sefer he wrote, Machane L'chol HaMachanot, Maseit L'chol HaMachanot, Vizel Shono, Efshar Sheyedu HaChronim V'yasigu Yoter Me'arishonim, he writes in his book, his doctor, that it is possible that the later authorities can know beyond the earlier authorities
and understand something they could not from two perspectives. Habachina achat vitam shekabar efshar sheish mi hachronim lakach liatzmo layein. He says it's possible that on the one hand that one person from Yachronim, lakach liatzmo layein bidrush echad miyutar miyuchad v'yishtadel v'hemik v'sambo kol sichlo v'yuyuno v'yishtadluto. He said it's possible that a layer of authority can look deeply into one particular area and invest in it all of his wisdom and all of his kochos, with all that he can possibly give it. In other words, he can be a specialist and focus upon one particular area of Torah. It's possible that by writing a book, let's say, on Hilchot Muksa, and just focusing his whole life on Hilchot Muksa, or in one particular other area, that he becomes known, like we have today, as an expert in this field, and he's so immersed in this particular field, maybe even sometimes to the degree that he's not focusing as well on Kala Torah Kula, but because he is so immersed into this one particular area, so it's possible that someone who came later can excel beyond someone who came earlier. Now the Chinah Shia, he says the second perspective, Shehinei Anachnu Achronim Im Hama'achi Madnu Be'im. He says we later authorities, although with a little bit that we have put ourselves into investigating deep thoughts, Yishadnu Harbe Yoter Bizman Muat Mimashi Siguhein Bizman Rav. Nonetheless, he says, we somehow are capable of absorbing much more in a small period of time than the Rishonim who were capable of doing it, but it took them a much longer period of time. And that's because, he says, in their time, all of the great areas of wisdom were still hidden and not yet completed. And they had to, with great effort, bring out the true understanding of these areas of wisdom. But we find everything as a set table for us. Kol divrayhem v'rayotehem v'sudarim u'bior chachmehem nira or v'hayu lanu le'nayim. Everything that they had before them, all their words, all their pieces of evidence was all set up for us, and consequently it was like light into our eyes. And today we would say, you have to realize in those times that he's talking about, shortly before, you know, there were still just, there weren't great libraries even to some degree yet. There wasn't the printing press. So it wasn't so easy to just go and get a book, you know, if you have a question, to look up a sefer. Or today, if you have the internet, to go to the Bar Ilan or whatever you want to find an answer to a question that you have. That was not possible. We, in a very short time, can go right to the source and find an answer to a question, which may have taken a Rishon a great deal of effort just to get the material in order to look at it. Of course, we're not saying we're greater than them, but we have the resources today that perhaps they did not have. And he goes on to say something fascinating. He says, the Hinshil hu mashal alav. And this doctor in his discussion gave an example, a mashal, a parable about how we should understand this being possible. He says, Mishel achad asher shema oto lechachmei amim. He says, he gave a mashal that was heard by him from a member of the nations. Shafirosopim shalu legadol shebahem. The philosophers themselves asked their great philosopher, "V'yamru halo anachnu modim sharishonim chachmu v'iskilu yoter mimenu." He said, "We admit we know that the earlier philosophers were greater than we are. V'hineh anachnu midabrim alehem v'sotrim et divrehem. And yet we speak about them and we even disagree with the things that they said. V'yam et itanu, and we know that the truth comes out to be like us. How could it be that such a thing has come out the way it's come out? It's impossible that the word is greater than the early authorities." Hey, Shivama Philosoph, the philosopher, answered his students, Lamar, Mitzope Yoter Mirachok, Hananas Ohanak. He says, who looks farther? Is it the giant who looks farther or the dwarf? Habi Omer Hanak. I would say the giant definitely looks farther than the dwarf. She'ainu amdos v'makom gavoa ma'od b'nei ha'ananas. He said, because it's clear that the giant, his eyes can see much further than can the dwarf. V'im tarkiv ananas b'tsovar ha'anak. Niro egoter. If, however, you will take the dwarf and you will put him upon the shoulders of the giants, so who then will see further? Aviomer hananas. Then I'll say the dwarf. The fishak shav eine hananas yoter gavot meine anak. Because now the dwarf's eyes are even higher than that of the giant. Kein anachnu nasim rochavim al tzavarei anakim. Hidnei shirainu chachmatam. So it is that we are sitting upon the shoulders of giants, and therefore, after seeing their knowledge, we can see even further than they could. V'anachnu shema mikim u'mikoach chachmatam chachmeinu chachachnu lomar kol ma she'anachnu omrim v'lo she'anu gedolim mehem. He says, and the reason that we now, if you will, know more than they did is not because we are wiser. It's not because of that. The reason we can go into greater depth and have greater understanding is because we are like dwarfs sitting on their shoulders, the shoulders of giants. You have the same idea repeated in various sources thereafter. For example, there's a paper I have called Orech Apayim, which discusses the fact that one should not get angry easily and the terrible things that happen if one gets angry. And in that sefer, he brings down the same idea, and he brings science specifically as an example. There he says, for example, he says, "Vine raya alzeh mikol mine hachamot chadasha bekelim miflayim shinsiulan uchokrim hachitzonim hachronim the kareva toelet bechol tzarchei aguf." We all admit that the latest technological developments, he's writing, I believe, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, he says, we all agree that certainly these developments we have seen in science and modern technology have made our lives easier, have helped our body, or anything we have to deal with practically. Shaloi Sigar Rishonim, and the early authorities did not understand them. Tohari Adanash Rishonim Hayubale Tivuna Yoter Avalhimak Matsvarazo. He says, of course, we know that the earlier authorities are not going to say that later scientists, even if they get into physics and other realms, and no one's going to say today that someone's greater than Galileo or greater than Mr. Isaac Newton. No, but if you take all of the material together and then you sit on top of it, you can see even further. Again, this idea being expressed in the Tzeev and his Hagdama to Lama Dava says the same thing, in fact. If you look there, he just makes a note of the fact that a scientist never complete their engagement in trying to find out the truth about various matters. And so, too, he says that the Torah scholar, in the same vein, that he will continue to look and to search, and it's impossible for him just to stop and give up just because earlier authorities said something. And while he doesn't say it clearly, I mean, I think it's understood that he's not saying that the later authorities are greater than the earlier authorities, but again, with their more information and their continual searching, they will come up with things the early authorities perhaps did not have. The Malbim, which I want to do inside because it's so beautiful, the Malbim, this is in Perush L'Tehillim, Kufmem Hei Dalid, Perush Ta'ashrei. So there he says the following. He's commenting on the Pasuk Dor L'Doi Shabbat Masecha Ozvotecha Yagidu, that from generation to generation, generation to generation will praise your works and they will speak of your greatness, the Gvurotecha Yagidu. So he points in the Malbim, he says, V'yeshev delvin shevach v'tehillah. There's a difference. Here it says, Dor l'dor shevach ma'asecha. What's the difference in the lashon of shevach versus that of tehillah? Both mean praise. He says, Geder ha-shevach shadavar mashbiach yoter mimash haya mikodem. Interestingly, he says when the word shevach is used, it means that there is a continual improvement. There's more praise and more praise as time goes on. It means, as it says, that as generation after generation continue to look further into the works of God and to the secrets of nature, they will notice wonders and wisdom that was hidden from the earlier generations. And they will praise more and more, as time goes on, therefore, the fact that they have even more knowledge about God's work than was until that time. Until every later generation, listen to this language, every later generation will then understand that the previous generation did not understand the works of God as they properly should have, because the later generations have more tools now to deal with what's before them that the earlier generations did not have. Again, while he is speaking in the realm of science, he's not speaking directly about the Chachmei HaTorah, although he says the Lashon at the end, Masi Hashem Karaui, we're calling the Masi Hashem, the acts of nature. But nonetheless, taken in context, we understand that so too, there is a notion of later generations, just like in science, being able to go forward with what they have previously, which was unknown to the earlier generations, as again we have said, the dwarf sitting on the giant's shoulders. It's probably a good time for me to admit at this point that I have myself, in presenting some of these sources in any event, been a dwarf upon giant's shoulders, and to tell you that particularly if you have more interest in this topic, and it's not a topic I can discuss very often, and that's why I decided to give this share. If you'd like to look, you can look at Dr. Norman Lamb and his Torah Mada has a beautiful discussion of this this subject. So too, Schneer Lehman, Dr. Schneer Lehman, in a article in Tradition magazine discussing, in fact, the notion of the dwarf sitting on top of the giant. So he too has a discussion, I recall, of this matter. I don't have it here in front of me. You can Tradition magazine is now online, and you can find the material there. But I recall that Dr. Lyman had this discussion as well. And now we're in a minute going to turn to another discussion with someone else as well, which I'll recommend you should look at. As I mentioned earlier, Dr. Menachem Kellner, in his work, Maimonides and the Decline of the Generation, which we'll look at in one moment. So he also has some very fascinating words to say about some of these sources. I'd like to now, however, consider, as this entree into looking at the Rambam's view on this subject, the following sources. We have said and considered the fact that it could be that due to an ontological difference to the mental, the intellectual capacity and capability of the generations, that this would explain the difference between them. Later generations did not have the mind. They were different beings, as we said, than the earlier generations. However, just to point out some sources which one could take as saying otherwise, Rashi, Gemara Makos, which famous Gemara for the end of Kavdala Damar Aleph, which discusses the fact that we know the 613 mitzvahs, Torah Tzimtzum Moshe, and then from there it puts forth how various individuals, Adam Melech and the Nevi'im, took the Torah of the 613 mitzvot and they made it more, if you will, acceptable, more easily upheld by kind of combining that into a different number of principles, as opposed to famous Gemara or the Reform movement wanted to say, you see that the Torah was 613, but the prophets came and made it smaller and smaller. And we understand this just to mean that the 613 is being encapsulated into a smaller number. And so David HaMelech, for example, gave 11 principles by which the Torah of 613 mitzvot could be incorporated. And on this notion and this whole idea, Rashi makes the following comment. He says, "Shebitchila yitzadikim." Earlier in generations, the early generations, they were righteous. Vayu yicholim lekabel ol mitzvot harbeh. They were able to accept the greatness, the heaviness of the
of the yoke of the commandments being placed upon them. But the later generations were not such tzaddikim. And so if they would have just been given, you know, all 613 mitzvot kind of spelled out, put upon them at once like that, so they would never have been able to survive and to merit to uphold the Torah. And therefore David HaMelech came and he put them in a more truncated, if you will, form. It says, Rashi says that the later generations were not the tzaddikim, the earlier generations were, did not say that they were not the chachamim. I'm just making that point. But more to the case, Rashi and Bab Metzia, the Talmud Gimel Amud Bet, where there's a discussion there about Machlokas and how it has become greater in Klal Yisrael, he says there, mitoch ol shibud malchiyot, the reason why Machlokas has increased in Klal Yisrael is because, he says, due to the yoke of the servitude to the nations that Klal Yisrael has had to go through being galus, the gzeros that goes in Aleihem, and the gzeros that were decreed upon them. Umitok kach lo hayu yicholim latet leiv livarer divrei hacholkin. And as a result, machloket has increased in Klal Yisrael because there are only a few minimal machlokets at the beginning, but as time went on, people were not capable of discerning exactly what the machlokas was about, which led to more disagreements and more debate until we have massive machlokas, already of course in the Gemara they're saying they have that certainly in our time. But notice Rashi's language is not that there was some distinction in terms of brain power by the different generations, but it was simply the result of being in Galus and undergoing the terrible situations that one encounters in being in exile, and thereby not being able, he says clearly, to focus upon the proper understanding of the machlokas. So it's not per se something in the nature of the mind, it's reality due to historical circumstances this is the case. Again, it does not sound necessarily to me like we're saying a donkey and a human being, which is, again, the Sadmi Kam said, two different sugei chayin, two different beings. Here it just sounds like historical circumstances were such that the Jewish people fell. If historical circumstances would improve, they may once again reach a high level. The Rambam, in his Hagdamah to the Mishnah Torah, his famous Hagdamah, also, I believe, gives the same thought as we are expressing here. He says that the reason that he's writing this work is because of the fact that in his time, so all of the writings of the great individuals after the Gaonim are difficult now to understand. He says, "Nikashu b'yameinu, v'ein mevin inyaneihem karawi." No one understands what's being said properly. Elama atem ispar, except for a very small group. V'ein tzarich lomar gemara asma. That's even the Gaonim, much less the Talmudic sources themselves. The Bava Yerushalmit, the Sifra of Sifra of Tosefta. Shem Srikin Dat Rachaba, all these things need a great wide breadth of knowledge to understand this. The Rambam says that it is lacking today. Again, he does not say necessarily because it's due to something in nature, but it's due to the fact that the circumstances do not allow for this to happen. The Rambam echoes this same statement, I believe, when in the famous Igaret Haman, his epistle to Yemen. So there he says, this is writing in 1172 after he came in 1167 to Egypt, the Rambam there says that he has not attained the learning of his forebears, and the reason, he says, is because he has labored continuously without finding rest. He says, how can it be that the law can be understood to someone who is a fugitive running from city to city and from country to country? Again, not saying that there's no way he could understand what earlier generations did because he's on a lower level. That's not what he's saying. He's saying because of the complete involvement that he has to have in just making a living while running from city to city, not being able to be settled and focused and to have proper clarity about the issues, that this is the reason for the lack of being on the highest level of learning, and not due to something that is
again, somewhat natural within him. It's at this point where I have to introduce the perspective of Rabbi Dr. Menachem Kellner from Eretz Yisrael, Haifa University. He suggests that the Rambam, not only does he seem to indicate from what we've quoted that it's an external issue that's involved in the fall of generations, not something internal in terms of the Chamor and Anashim comparison. Not only is it something external which is the cause, but moreover, he wants to claim, Dr. Kellner does, that the Rambam, because of his own shitas, with reference to various issues, cannot hold by the notion of Yiridas HaDoros, of the declining generations. And here's why, he says. He says, and this is a chiddush to me, that the reason the Rambam can't hold by it is for something we all know, I believe. But it's put into perspective by Dr. Kellner. In Avos, there's a famous statement, you know, Asarad Varim Nivru Be'er Shabbos, that there are 10 things that were created on Erev Shabbos, Benash Matros, at twilight, and then it goes on to list these 10 things. And as we know, the Rambam Shita is, as he says in his commentary there on Avos, that all miraculous things were in fact created at that time. It wasn't just these things. It was all miracles, according to the Rambam, being created at that time. The reason being that the Rambam's view is, he confirms this in the Mor Nevuchim, in Perek Bet, Kaf Tet, that the Rambam believes that basically the world is created with miracles built in. God is not one, if you want to see it this way, who needs to constantly be playing, sewing on the buttons and pushing this little red button over here and making sure that this is taken care of. God does not have to do that like we have to. God can set up the world in such a way that it continues to run in a healthy fashion without having to constantly be on watch for the need to change or to invest things into creation. It's kind of the opposite view we should think of the idea of Hashkacha Pratit, where God is involved in every single moment. So that being the case, the Rambam Shita is that miracles really were built into creation. When we see them take place at the proper time when they're supposed to occur, so it's not that it just happened then. It was put into nature just like everything else was put into nature. And really, in fact, it is nature, therefore. It's just that it was only supposed to occur one time in history. It was invested into creation from the beginning, and when it happened, it was supposed to happen just like everything else was supposed to happen as part of the natural surroundings. But it happened that one time. That is the Rambam Shita in terms of how miracles are, if you will, part of nature and not really, if you will, supernatural. They're only supernatural to us because they do not come on a regular basis. He says that again in the Mor Nevuchim, as I said, Perek Bet Kaf Tet. He says that the thing, furthermore, does not change its nature in a way where the change is permanent. Even when miracles did happen, furthermore, as I'm pointing out, the Rambam says that, for example, when the rod turned into a serpent, instead of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the water turned into blood. With all these miracles, when they happened as well, there was not a permanent result of the miracles happening. It was only temporarily, that these things occurred. And as the Rambam quotes so famously various times, Ha'olam Kamin Hagol Noheg, the world runs in its customary way. That is to say, it was set up that way from creation to run that way. When miracles do happen, they happen within the same plan as God planned for everything else that happens in the natural order that we see on a regular basis. If this is the case, then it would seem that the Rambam, Dr. Kellner says, cannot hold by Yiridas HaDoros, at least according to the notion of the Chamor and the Ben Adam comparison, because accordingly that would be saying that at some point we became donkeys instead of human beings in terms of our ability to understand Torah. And this was itself, it would seem to be something miraculous, how human beings kind of then spiraled downward to such a degree that they can be called Hamori. And yet, this miraculous occurrence continues throughout generations. The Rambam Shita is that a miracle, even if it is built in and meant to happen, even if you know that the nature of the human being, of the Jew, changed in terms of his ability to comprehend
the Torah that he was confronting due to Yiridas HaDoros. But this is not something that God puts into creation as a continual part of creation. The Rambam says miracles only happen when they're meant to happen. They only happen temporarily. That's why, by the way, the Rambam says in some of his writings that the manna was such an incredible miracle. The man in the desert, which went for 40 years, that was the longest, if you will, temporary miracle that ever existed. Usually miracles happen, the splitting of the sea, and they're done and finished, and that's it. So consequently, the Rambam would hold, Dr. Kellner says, that you could not have Yiridas HaDoros in terms of a change, miraculously, of human nature. That would go against the Rambam's basic shita. Furthermore, it's interesting as well, the Rambam, in the Mordechai, Gimel Tetzayin, the third book, chapter 16, the Rambam says there as well, an amazing statement about science and math. He says that one should not find it strange if Chazal are wrong. He says this, that if they said things concerning mathematics and science that were not the way that things actually are, the Rambam says, one should not feel this is impossible, that Chazal had all knowledge at their fingertips and could not be incorrect. No, the Rambam says, it's not true. He says that's only talking about their custodianship being conveyors of the Masorah, of the Torah tradition. However, when it comes to the fields of knowledge that are handmaidens, as the Rambam says in one of his letters to Torah, nonetheless, those areas, it is possible that mistakes can be made. Why? Because the Rambam says that, he says it clearly there, while I'm quoting you, he says that the knowledge in these fields were either Chachamim were great in those fields, and it was the knowledge of their day, or they got their information from people who were great in those fields of knowledge, and that was as well the wisdom of their day, but it was not yet perfect, perhaps, in their day. So that the Rambam says that mathematics and certain laws of astronomy were not completely developed yet, as of the time of Chazal. And consequently, one does not have to claim, as you often hear, perhaps, that it's apikorsis to say that the Chachamim could have made a mistake in science. It's not true. The Chachamim are not responsible for having to guard the tradition of science. They are responsible for guarding the tradition of the Masorah of Klal Yisrael, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebichtav. And the sciences come along to help interpret and to help us understand more properly. And again, the Rambam says clearly that it could be that the science and the other knowledge, well, itself, the Rambam believes, is a true source of knowledge. Science, mathematics, astronomy, physics, and so on. But nonetheless, it's only true when it's been developed to its proper state, when it was still in its infant or even intermediary stages and not developed yet, then it could lead one to an error. And the Rambam, again, says this quite clearly. This would indicate, as we said before, certainly the Rambam held that with regard to science and mathematics, that later generations are greater than earlier generations. And Dr. Kellner, by the way, points out amazingly, tell me what you'll do with this statement, quoting the Rambam again, this is the Mor Nevuchim, the third book in chapter 51. There he points out the famous palace parable of the Rambam. For those who are not familiar with it, the Rambam is a parable where the king is inside the palace, and outside the palace you have all sorts of people, people walking away from the palace, people facing toward the palace, people walking around the palace, people who are further in the palace, and then the hope is to get inside the actual room with the king. The Mashal of the Ribbono Shel Olam is the one who's inside, and to get in there, one has to reach a certain level of knowledge and understanding. And the Rambam says, in what many view as controversial, that just to be a Talmud Chacham, even a great Talmud Chacham, would not get one on the inside of the king. It would still be somewhat in the antechamber. To finally get on the inside, he says you would have to know physics and metaphysics, along with your great knowledge of Torah. And thereby, the Rambam says that, resorting to this parable, that Ben Zoma, the Gemara says, Ben Zoma is still on the outside. Gemara Chagiga, I believe, which discusses those who went through the Pardes and what happened to each of them, as we know. Ben Zalman says it's still on the outside, and the Rambam says, telling his students for whom he wrote the entire Mor Nevuchim, for those who don't know, the Rambam wrote his entire Mor Nevuchim for one student. That teaches you how important it is to be a teacher in Klal Yisrael. He wrote an entire work, one of his greatest works, for one student who was perplexed, as he should have been, the Rambam says. Some miscalculate. They think the Rambam means guys that are perplexed. People try to misunderstand the Rambam and say he meant that he wrote this book for those who are perplexed. He didn't write it for really great people who are tzaddikim and great chachamim. That is nonsense. The Rambam wrote this for those who are perplexed. He was perplexed. That is to say that you are perplexed when you excel in your Torah knowledge, and you excel in your knowledge of his time, of Aristotle and metaphysics, and then you come to clash on certain items, and that perplexment is the result of one's incredible knowledge and level of understanding of Torah and of God's world. The perplexed are the greatest scholars, the Rambam says. They're the ones who are on the inside with the Ribbono Shel Olam. But he uses this language that Ben Zoma is still on the outside. I think the Gemara said Ben Zoma is still on the outside. But look what the Rambam does with it. He says to his student that if you've only studied certain things and not yet got into, he says, the deeper metaphysics, then like Ben Zoma, you are still on the outside. If, however, you have understood the natural things, he tells him, and then you are walking into the antechambers, and if you finally achieve perfection in that realm and understood the divine science, philosophy, and metaphysics, then you have entered the inner core, he says, of the palace. So it's pointed out by Dr. Kellner that he's telling his students, it seems, that the Rambam understands that where Ben Zoma could not get in, if you will, going back to the Baal HaTanya, that where the Arizal could go further than Moshe Rabbeinu. So where Ben Zalma could not go into the palace with the king, it's possible for someone in the Rambam's time, his student namely, to go into the palace with the king, having the knowledge of physics and metaphysics and philosophy that Ben Zalma did not have. Is it saying, as it seems to be saying, that it's possible for an individual in the Rambam's time, and certainly in our time perhaps, to go beyond Ben Zoma, the Tana Ben Zoma, and to actually enter the palace? This is what Dr. Kellner seems to indicate the Rambam might be saying if you take his words seriously and look at it in this from this perspective. As, by the way, no surprise, I saw this as well in Dr. Lamb's Torah Mada, this incredible quote that Rav Avram ben Rambam, also, as we are discussing here, this whole lecture, the notion of the authority of early authorities versus the authority of later authorities, so and how they have to respond and connect to each other. The Rav Avraham ben Rambam, in a source I could not find in the original, so I'm just quoting it from Dr. Lamb in the English. So he says, this is in Torah Mada. I believe it's in his introduction, if I recall correctly. So there he gives the following quote. He says, "You must know that it is injurious to strive to cause a certain view to prevail because one reveres the one who propounded it and therefore wishes to accept it without pondering and understanding it, regardless of whether it is true or not. This is forbidden both from the point of view of the Torah and the point of view of reason. Reason cannot accept it, because it implies a lack of deficiency in understanding that which we are required to believe in. And from the vantage point of Torah, because it diverges away from the way of truth and departs from the path of integrity." Wow. "Whether we accept it because we believe the one who uttered it and respect him and assert that he must undoubtedly be right because he is a great man, not only this is not adequate proof, it is forbidden to believe that we should accept something just because a great man said it." This goes against all of modernity, contemporary, certainly from Yiddish kind of year. The Rebbe said something, or Rav said something, and immediately was dealt. Rav so-and-so said it. He must have said it correctly. He must have sources and so on. Rav Avraham ben Rambam says just because someone said something, you have to listen to what he said. How many times do we know it's something said out of context? If something says, someone quotes a Rebbe is saying something, a Rav is saying something, it's totally off. The Rav is saying it in a certain perspective and from a certain vantage point and not as an overall statement of truth. And yet it's repeated again and again and again. So Rav Avraham ben Rambam, being a good Talmud of his father, who, as we showed, certainly believed that in certain realms, at least, one certainly could go beyond earlier authorities. So too, Rav Avraham ben Arambam says that if you find this is the case by investigating what you're required to do, then you have to do so. You just cannot just accept something that's been said in the name of early authority because it was said. We are now led to a final discussion of this notion of Yerida Sadoros, that to some degree, without having said it, the Rambam, where, you know, I had to kind of reach into the Rambam sources to pull out, if you will, the Chiddush that the Rambam seems to certainly confront the Yerida Sadoros idea and not just fully accept it and hold that one certainly in the field of science can go beyond earlier generations and maybe in Torah too. It's unknown. But certainly it's a question. Finally, Rav Tzadok HaKlamim Zin, in various works, Pri Tzadik, which you say, Laila, Likutei Ma'amarim, and I must give my thanks to Professor Yaakov Elman of Yeshiva University for his beautiful article that he wrote also once concerning this theme in the pages of tradition. So, Rav Tzadok says even more than we've tried to say the Rambam, kind of more clearly, that we have more profound insights into Torah as well, it seems, than earlier authorities. For example, in the Priva Tzadik, Hey, Kuflam and Gimel, he says, Shemati mirabeinu kadosh, Sha'ala v'shem harav rabunim, he means rabunim mi parshishka, the famous rabunim, he says, Sha'amar, Sha'af, Sha'adorot, Hamokot, Mitmatin, the Chopam, even though it's true that in later generations, the minds, the brains, the intellects of individuals become smaller, the Chopam, continuously throughout the generations, you have to be makabel that he says, Avamikudat hachayim shebelev mitrachev tamid v'nase mizuchach b'chol pam b'galut yoter. He says, however, that yet the appreciation of truth, what Elman understands his lashon to mean, nikudat hachayim shebelev, the appreciation of truth that one has increases and becomes purified through galus, through the exiles. In other words, even though we are in a later generation and certainly on a lower level, and in terms of our, yes, if you want to go with the Hamor comparison, that our minds are naturally, he says, smaller and incapable to some degree of understanding what the earlier Rishonim understood, still, he says, we have a greater appreciation and a greater passion, perhaps, for the truth that tends to guide us and lead us with more intensity toward areas that the Rishonim perhaps did not encounter. Excuse me. He thereby says in Rishisei Laila, the previous view was from Prima Tzadik, Hey, Kufamatet, in Rishisei Laila, Hara Yud Gimel Daf Yud Bet, so there he says the following. We'll just do it outside as the hour is late. But he mentions that different lights are opened in Klal Yisrael. He says, "Afa pishehem mitkatnim v'holchim." Even though the generations go smaller and smaller as they go, he says, "Lepisha shikol ha'orot sheniftachim v'chol dor v'dor yidei anshei segula mechachmei Yisrael." Still, once the lights are opened by the great sages of Klal Yisrael throughout the generations, ein nistamim. Hold. They're not closed once they've been opened. They are open, and once they are open, they are not closed. In other words, we can understand this. Once philosophy came about in Jewish history, Kabbalah, once certain works came out and made things understood that were not understood before, once Hasidus and Musar and what have you has come about, that is now introducing new ways, has introduced new ways to understand Torah. Once that happened, it doesn't just then close as generations continue. Those areas, those lights, he says, remain open so that even those of us who are of later generations,
as he puts it with the famous statement, he says it, who are dwarfs on the shoulders of giants. Once we have that information in hand, along with everything that we have received throughout our history, we have more information that keeps growing and growing and coming toward us and allowing us to develop. He says that we actually have the ability as a result. He says this lashon. He says, Mikol makom heim b'ma'amakim yoter kein kevar avru shar b'nafsham shen niftach l'rishonim. He says that even though there's no doubt we're inferior to some degree, but our insights are more profound because we have already passed through the gates that the earlier generations have opened. He, by the way, just interestingly says as well with reference to Rabbi Akiva and our Gemara in Menachos Daf Kaf Pet, which we quoted before with all the controversy about Rabbi Akiva, Moshe Rabbeinu sitting in the shir and not being able to understand what's going on, and I mean, his dork statement shows that Moshe Rabbeinu was not on the level of Rabbi Akiva, and we show that Rabbi Akiva was, Moshe Rabbeinu had not received the Torah yet, that Rabbi Akiva says the pre-tzadik, this is an Aleph Lamed Zion, says the Ratzadik of Lublin, he says that Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues, in terms of comprehension, he said, their comprehension, even though it was Yeridus Adaros, he says, still, there's a certain light, as he explained, from the heart, that went further and to a greater depth than even that of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's almost like he says that the greater one is in darkness, the more meaningful the light will be that he perceives. And thereby he understands that as later generations continue on, that as we were in exile and in the darkness, that the light became all the more meaningful and profound to us. Dr. Ellman puts it beautifully. He says that the universe exists in a state of dynamic equilibrium, according to Sadok. Just like darkness preceded light in creation, the enslavement in Egypt preceded the redemption and the giving of the Torah, so one cannot fully understand Torah until, as he quotes various Gemaras, one stumbles over them first, until one has experimented and saw things as being incorrect, and only thereafter realizing what the true notion was, almost like the Baal Tshuva being greater than the Tzaddik. Somehow, when Klal Yisrael has reached such a low level as they have in the Galus, so that enables them to desire to a greater fashion than anyone the truth that is before them in the sources, and that motivates them to come up with new insights and new ideas that are more profound than previous generations. We all know that if a person has been through something, to a tragedy, to an illness, to a crisis with a family or friend, certainly with one's spouse, he can yet emerge stronger than before. I was once told by a certain rabbi, once heard him say, I believe it's true medically, I've been told, that if someone breaks a leg, so when they put the leg back together to heal it, that the leg becomes even stronger than before, which you would think, how could that be? The original leg was one piece, and now you take two pieces and put them back together, how could it be? But apparently it is. By going through something and becoming broken, one can yet become stronger than before. Nachman says that there is no heart as whole and complete as a broken heart. And so too, generation after generation, we may be on a lower level, but yet we have the ability to achieve a tikkun and a redemption that perhaps was not available to the generations that came earlier. Our receiving of Medinat Yisrael after the Shoah, are being a part of the reconquering of Yerushalayim, certainly we are not of the earlier Rishonim and the greater generations, and yet we merit the things that they did not, perhaps specifically because of the low level that we had to reach in the Galus with the Holocaust and Klal Yisrael, and thereby being able to somehow even be lifted to a higher Madrega as a result. So in conclusion, let me just say that we have seen the different views that have been put forth by the various sources, and that certainly we understand now, I believe, on a greater level, the notion
of what Yiridas HaDolos means. We saw that there is certainly such a notion, but that individuals can overcome it, that there are some Gemaras that seem to imply that in some cases later generations can excel beyond previous generations. We saw the notion of Chachamim leaving us a place to be able to grow ourselves and to delve into areas that the Rishonim did not delve into. We saw this being coupled with the idea of a dwarf sitting on the shoulders of a giant, that beyond that, that the Rambam perhaps had his own shita, that maybe the vicissitudes of life are what caused Klal Yisrael to lose its ability to properly understand Torah on the highest level, not due to some natural miracle that took place in the change of man between the Rishonim and the Achronim. And the Rambam even showed this by showing in science nature that the early authorities, in fact, go beyond what the later authorities, go beyond what the earlier authorities have said. And finally, coming to Rav Tzadok, the idea that I in fact heard from Rav Kook, in the name of Rav Kook one time, I think is related to what Rav Tzadok is saying, that even though we're getting farther from Har Sinai, from the source, of course, of our knowledge, that nonetheless we are reaching more excitingly as we have that need for the Geula of Klal Yisrael, and consequently that's what allows us with that desire to come up with great insights at times that seem to be even something that the Rishonim did not have, so to speak. I heard someone once say in just the final statement that so we know that the statement that we are told in our first source that we saw, one of our early sources that we've been looking at all along, that if we said our, if the early authorities are like Malachim, then we are like Anashim. And if the early authorities are like Anashim, then we are like Chamorim. So someone once said that if we should understand like this, why did the Gemara give two different scenarios? Just say one or the other. Why did it give the two cases? Because if you see the Malachim, the early authorities as Malachim, then you're on Anashim. If you see the early authorities as Anashim, then you are Chamorim. You don't have to be Chamorim. It's only if you see early authorities with such a low level in terms of your perspective that you think the early authorities are just plain human beings, just like you, that they're no different than you, then you are Chamor. If, however, you see the early authorities as Malachim, as something incredible in terms of their ability to connect the Ribbono Shel Olam with their Torah, so then you will be like Anashim, and then you can achieve. It should be God's will that we should be able to achieve, that we should be able to learn Torah on the highest level that we can, and it should be that the view of Rav Tzadok should come about that with the knowledge that we have, even if it is on a lower level than the Rishonim, that nonetheless we will be able to reach even a higher level with our inspiration toward the Geula. May it come, b'mehera, b'yameinu.